Blog Talk Radio.
Hello, listening audience. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight and being a part of a national dialogue designed for proactive change. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. I'm grateful again to engage each and every one of you in very important conversation. I need your help as I endeavor to take this message and the conversation we share on air to targeted cities and urban areas across America with the hope and desire to improve the quality of lives by engaging communities and proactive strategies. You can be of great help by going to our webpage, www.bfcinstitute.com. Click on the donation tab or the contact us tab and find ways that you can assist us by either purchasing our items or just making a donation on our secure PayPal site. If you are a business or someone who would like to make a corporate level contribution and you would like more information, please give me a call at 615-498-4669 or send me an email at bfcinstitute@gmail.com. That's bfcinstitute@gmail.com, or give us a call at 615-498-4669. We are glad to share with you and provide you all the necessary information to help you make the decision to support us in our traveling lecture series. Too often, the use of the word community is reduced to a mere euphemism, which means little of nothing to people that are forced to live together, particularly when it comes to urban communities. Those who make up the population tend not to control the quality of the education in that community. They tend not to control the economics of that community, and they tend to be overly dependent. Additionally, there is a major division as it relates to the people that live in that area, those neighborhoods that make up the proposed community. No unity, very little to no unity. When it comes to theological direction that factors into cultural affinity and identity for its young. Now, we talked last month with Lil Pookie, a young man in a 6x6 room, and we tried to give him some guidance and bring him out. And now we're telling him, go back to your community. You've been locked up for a month with us. Now go back to your community. But Pookie want to know, what am I going back to? So throughout the month of March, our theme has to do with focusing on ways to strengthen urban communities across America. That's what we're going to be talking about in our episodes. So beginning tonight, we're going to begin that thread of conversation with the topic, Pillars of a Viable Community, how to restore urban America. How to restore urban America. That's our focus tonight. And from there, we'll have other conversations throughout the month of March. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. You're listening to Talk Straight, another episode. Thank you for joining us again this Thursday night. And we offer you to call us, to share with us your thoughts, your ideas, your questions, your comments. 657-383-0944 is the number to call, calling in live. Again, 657-383-0944. We are welcoming everyone. All we ask is that you keep your conversation relevant to our topic, reasonably so at least anyway, and that you be respectful of all of our callers. From time to time, we have guests. In case you're listening for the first time, Talk Straight is a national-based dialogue where Building Families and Communities Institute seeks to share and spread our research-based model for addressing the needs of at-risk, particularly African-American males, but males in general, But the focus, particularly, as I said, is on African-American males who are at risk across urban America. That's what our research is based on, all right? And we've looked at how to address those things, turn them around. And I want to challenge our listeners, because I've had people say to me, well, what you're saying sounds good, but we don't see it in action. We don't see it working. Truth of the matter is, if a community, if a circumstance is to be fixed or changed, it's not about me or what I do, but it's about you and what you do. So what I offer is means by which you do, show you how to facilitate and use your best resources around you. And perhaps you are the very best resource. If you can bring us to your city, talk to your pastors, talk to your local community organizations, or anyone that would be helpful in bringing BFC Institute, Building Families and Communities, to your local area, and we'd be happy to share our research-based model with you. You can go to our website to access us at www.bfcinstitute.com. On there, there's contact information. When you click the contact tab, you can find our phone number and email, and just subscribe to us online. We'll be happy to respond accordingly. All right. That being said, Pastor Ricky Waller will be joining us. He's out busy doing ministry, so he'll be in and out with us tonight. So we're grateful for him. He's our regular panelist and the author of the powerful book, Still High. And we've been working with him over the last 2 years or so, and we appreciate the fact that every time you purchase one of his books, he make a contribution to BFC Institute to assist us in our calls. And you can find that on our website as well. I mentioned the contact tab. Click down and go to the back store, and you'll find a number of items, even our research-based material, our literature and things of that nature, and souvenir items. When you make a contribution, it's just a way of saying thank you for doing so. And please do so and support our cause. We are a 501c3 nonprofit organization that existed since 1998. Actually, it's Building Families and Communities Missions Incorporated. However, Institute is the research arm that allows us to go and travel and things of that nature. All right. All right. With that being said, we're going to go now. And as you know, we have a monologue, and I'm going to go into my monologue now. Again, the number to call us here is 657-383-0944, and you're welcome to join us here. We'll just keep on going through the show here as we have it. I do want to recognize those of you that's been communicating with us via Facebook and following us there, our live stream since we've been doing it, as well as making your comments. We appreciate that. Appreciate that. And we encourage you to give us a call and be a part of our live dialogue. Okay. Having said that, again, we're going to keep it moving here. This is March 1st, 2018. Time is moving on. And I found out that it's true that it waits on nobody. I asked it if it could wait a minute, give me a second. And it said, you just lost a second by asking me that. So I realize time is selfish, but nonetheless, here we are. The topic again is pillars of a viable community, and we're talking about how to restore urban America. You may have seen the promo. We didn't put two in there. That was not intentional, but we asked your forgiveness there. But what we're talking about is how to restore urban America. Ecclesiastes, the 4th chapter, verses 9 through 4, reads, two are better than one because they have a good reward for their labor. For if they fall, the one will lift up his fellow. But woe to him that is alone when he falleth, for he has not another to help him up. Again, if two lie together, then they have heat. But how can one be warm alone? And if one prevails against him, two shall withstand him, and a threefold cord is not quickly broken. Ecclesiastes 4, verses 9 through 12. Now, let's talk about the different dynamics and elements of the community. And let me just give a functional background and meaning of the word community. The word community is derived from the Latin communitas, which means fellowship. And it is derived from communis or common. Okay? The prefix com, C-O-M, signifies that there is togetherness of people or a group, and they are working in conjunction with one another. Now, should you remove the prefix com, what you're left with is munis, meaning to fortify, strengthen, or defend. Put them back together, and what you have is people that are united together, fortifying, strengthening, defending one another, a common interest. As it relates to urban American neighborhoods, what is really the function there? Well, it simply is a group of people that live in the same locale or vicinity, same place. Too often, though, they have no particular unity. Amen? And the characteristics of them is that they're there, but they're not very unified. And somebody else controls the major mechanisms that keep the community moving. There's a difference in the latter in a group of people who practice, deliberately practice working together, controlling those elements. And I'm going to talk about those in just a second here. And they realize that the outcome of everybody's success depends on their unification and their working together, because they have shared social values, and all of them are responsible for making sure that the community is happy, healthy, and whole. Now, let's talk about what a pillar is, P-I-L-L-R. It's a person or thing who is regarded as reliable and who provides essential support, guidance, and wisdom. You know, that's what's missing in a lot of areas. And what is needed is for individuals to step up to the plate and assume responsibility for making sure that there's proper guidance and information. We typically call those individuals elders, who are the pillars of our community, right? They're identified by their active engagement. They take a protective role when it comes to the education of our children, health and safety, welfare, when it comes to economic viability and the strength and vitality. These are the people that's going to get up and say something. They're not going to sit back and say nothing and do nothing, nor just look out for themselves. They provide structure and example for the young as well as the old. All right? That's what a pillar is in a community. And this is the fabric or the glue, if you will, that keeps the community together. The more pillars you have, the stronger the community. When you have that, you have what's called viability, which is simply noticed by when people are working together successfully, when they're unified as a group or an entity, and they're able to survive as such because they're working toward a common goal. You have viability in that community because there are identified pillars of the community. Now, you know this, our topic has to do with these three pillars. Let's describe them. And I want to talk to you about what in any healthy community or society or group, these things are present. I'm not suggesting that they're the only thing, but they are key things. Historically, when you look sociologically and anthropologically at the greatest societies known to mankind, they had these things. They had some system of teaching or education for their young. They had some sort of economic means to provide for and to sustain the community of residents. And there was some clearly theological perspective that all of them agreed on that kept them unified together. And let me back up and talk about those three pillars of any viable community or society. Now, as I talk about education, let me, I've said this before, let me be very clear. people argue whether or not education is what they need to be successful. Then some will make the case that, well, there are people that are successful that made a lot of money. They ain't got no education, all right? There may be some truth to that, but is that what real success is? You got money. Now you're making, you're fattening frogs or snakes. They come to look for you now because they want some of what you got. You understand what I'm saying? Well, consider this. Education is merely a process that involves teaching and learning. Somebody's providing instruction and somebody's receiving it. We know they've learned, and individuals learn when we can see a measurable change in their behavior after they have been introduced to what? Instruction, example, information. We can see them applying that and using it. That's really what education in a nutshell is all about. Don't want to oversimplify it, but that's it right there. Okay? The most important aspect of education, though, and the question that we have to ask ourselves, particularly when we're trying to deal with the challenges of urban young people in urban communities, is what are we teaching them? What is the subject matter, or what they call the content material that's being taught? Now, what happens is a lot of babies grow up, and the assumption is when they come to the public school setting that the glass is half empty or full. The assumption is that they understand what's expected of them. Let me tell you, I point out a few things that when you have a healthy educational system, young people can benefit and depend on by the time they complete that. Typically, we send children between compulsory school attendance, mandate that between 6 years old and 17, you got to be in somebody's school. And that's pretty much universal across most of the United States, with exception in a few areas. Okay, but after 12 years of public education, the expectation is that you're going to be ready. You have what you need to survive, to compete, and to be a productive citizen. Well, we see that in urban America, clearly not the case. And education should empower children and adults alike to become productive participants within their community and the society as a whole. A Bolivian educator by the name of Dr. Paulo Freire talks about how community education is essential because it taps into the real-life experience of the elders, the pillars, and it transforms them or passes that down to the young people who will come up and benefit from that. Focus on values. When a child is properly educated, and that means it's not just the public school setting or the brick and mortar, that fabricated and learning environment. But learning begins at home. You have to partner with those teachers and those formal instructors. But where the learning has to take place is there must be teaching about values, attitudes, and behaviors. And this enables individuals to learn to live together, to get along with other people, and to be a productive citizen to give back to the society from which you grew out of. Education allows individuals to have a sense of purpose and identity. Now, part of that don't start in the public school. That starts at home. So education really begins at home. It extends itself into the public sector. And in a well-organized, well-cared-for community, pillars or key people are seeing to it that whatever the formal public educational setting is, they're making sure their children get the things that they need. We just had a gentleman on the other night. He talked about the importance of reading, and he talked about the importance of looking at records and data and research to help drive that effort. Now, clearly we know that that's not all it is, because you got to eat and you got to sleep, but that's the parent's job. The assumption is that the public school is going to do what should happen. The learning that should take place first at home cannot be supplemented after the child get up to be a chronological age in the public school system. But in a viable community, you control your public education system by being involved as a voter and as a co-educator at home with that teacher and being aware of what the expectations are. Learning from the state that you live in. right, as well as federal mandates and local mandates, local education agencies. Being aware of those things are key. All right? So, summation of education. We'll come back to it in just a minute here. Now, let's talk about the economics, which I identified as another pillar of a viable community. Economic functions are used to categorize actions that are performed by agents in any economic system. And really what we're talking about is the resources that are available. How do you get bread? Where do you get the resources to buy clothes, to pay mortgage or rent? Where do you get the resources to get medicine, things of that nature? How do you earn that? In a well-organized and an effective educational system, once you graduate, you're in a position to acquire legally those resources and to contribute to the economy of your community. But more importantly, when you know how to start your own business, you control your time and you make a contribution to the society or the community in which you live. Those that are less fortunate than you are able to benefit from your philanthropic activities and others like you. But the whole aim is not for you to become dependent, but independent economically and socially. And therefore, you have political voice. Okay? Now, one or more persons can perform several of these functions in an economic system. Now, consider this. And you ask yourself, where do I fall in this ladder? As a consumer, somebody who's only putting in, never really getting anything out, you can't see any profit for your labor and the funds that you put in. You really can't track that too well. An entrepreneur, one of those who take a risk to start a business, to meet a demand, to supply something that is in demand. That takes a risk and it takes responsibility, right? You could be a landowner. Are you a renter or a landowner? This is what we're talking about in terms of factors of economics in your community. Are you a worker or do you own your own business? As a worker, you're not going to tell your employer how much you're going to get paid. We hear that argument now. We want greater wages. That's good and fine, and it sounds good, but the reality is people go in business to make money, not to give out charity per se. You start your charitable organization for that. But in a community, it's necessary that you have business owners or entrepreneurs who are helping keep that community alive. In urban America, what we see is more people are dependent on public assistance, and so they have very little voice to tell them certain things are not right in your public school system and your social service industry and the whole nine yards. Because you get too snappy, we may cut your check off. But when you're in a position where you control those things and you have political voice, you can have a greater say on how those things are done. All right, lastly, the theology is what we talked about. The third pillar is theology. And by that we mean that the day-to-day functions of people's lives are based on their core life experience and those shared with others. Too often in urban America, there is a thought or belief that I got to look out for me first before anybody else. And I got to make sure that somebody going to die, I got to kill them before they kill me, you understand? Too many people have this as a basic construct. This is their theology. And they believe God gave them the right to position themselves in this manner for their survival. Get what you need by any means, even if you have to break the prescribed laws of the greater society. You know how we do. We got to get it the way we live, man. One fella said, I'm going to get rich or die trying. You understand what I'm saying? Can you see the contorted mentality here? And when we're talking to this young man in this 6x6 box, can you understand why he straps himself with a pistol and he does what he does to survive? Because there's been a major breakdown in his home. And these things have not been provided for him. He didn't get it from school, didn't get it from home, didn't get it from the library, didn't get it from the – he's getting it from the block, though, in terms of what should he do every day. I mean, you might not like it, but it's a reality. And we're talking about what's going on in urban America. If you don't know this, you don't know how to solve or fix the problems of urban America. You ain't ready. Go sit down. And there are a lot of people who jump up in a heartbeat like they're ready, like they know what's going on. And they don't. Now, the reality is if you don't accept these things and you don't realize them, you're going to have a hard time reaching the people that you're supposed to reach. There are some young men from Houston, Texas, and they go by the stage name as the Ghetto Boys. They've been around a little while. And now let me just give you a disclaimer. The music that we're about to listen to, it has a little harsh language in it, but we grown folk. Okay, this is a academic discussion tonight. And again, if you want to understand how to reach Pookie and these young cats in the streets, young ladies and dudes, it's important that you accept what's on their mind and you hear from them. Just listen for a second to the Ghetto Boys as they talk about the ghetto experience.
While the other shot, well, motherfuckers had no money spot. And if they did, then they asked when insane when all the money stopped. I'm from the ghetto, so I'm used to that. Look on your motherfucking map and find Texas and see where Houston at. It's on the borderline of hard times. And it's seldom that you hear niggas praying and giving God time. That's why I ask my mind to pray for me. Because I know that even I got to die and he got a day for me. And every morning I wake up, I'm kinda glad to be alive. The thousands of my homeboys died. And very few died of old age. In most cases, the incident covered up the whole place. From Amsterdam to Amarillo, it ain't no secret. The world is a ghetto.
You're listening to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. Tonight, we're talking from the topic, Pillars of a Viable Community, How to Restore Urban America. Pastor Wallace is going to be in and out with us tonight. Welcome, Pastor Wallace. How you doing, sir?
I'm all right, Pastor Dockery. How you doing, man?
Mighty fine. Mighty fine. And I think this, that pretty lady out of Peoria, Illinois. Lord have mercy. 8112, yes. How you doing?
Hi, Pastor Dockery. I'm doing well. Thank you so much.
Great. Welcome back to the show. Let me start with you, 8112. Where did I go wrong? Correct me now. I opened myself up to correction. Where did I go wrong?
See, I just got on here. You're doing it again.
Okay.
okay. Now, the topic is what, sir?
It's Pillars of a Viable Community, How to Restore Urban America. The assumption is they're broken down. There's a breakdown in urban America, in the hood, in the ghetto. And
yes,
we want to talk
is.
About how to restore. Okay?
I agree. I can only voice my opinion on this with all due respect. Don't mean to offend anyone.
Yes, ma'am.
I'm not a man, and I've never been a young black man, but I was speaking to my Edison Living a little while ago, and we were kind of speaking on actually upon something like this. And he was reminding me of how the things he used to do that I knew nothing about.
Uh-oh.
But he had enough sense to know I wouldn't approve of them. So, and I'm like, what are you talking about? And we were holding this discussion. I said that to say this. I think it's we've lost our way to try to reach a lot of these young people, and sometimes when you're not out there feeling them, hearing them, and listening to them, you got to be in their world directly doing what they do.
Yes.
But I have a lot
yes.
of them speak to me very respectfully because I listen to them. And they call me auntie, they call me mom. And I like that because I taught them as I tried to teach my own children.
Right.
And
okay.
sometimes in the business world, I guess I would say that it may be, it's going to be a hell of a fight, but with all due respect, we look for the men folks to kind of grab a hold of them, and they look for that too, but it don't happen, as you say, in the like the south side of anywhere. A lot of time they say the south side is the worst side of everywhere you go.
Mm.
But that don't
Wait
mean
a minute.
They're bad
I'm
people.
From the south side of Chicago. Wait a minute now. Hold
I
on.
Am too. I was born on the south side of Chicago, born in
okay,
Cook County
right.
Hospital.
Watch out now. Watch out now.
And my mom took us to here where I'm at now, Peoria, Illinois,
okay.
to save my brothers for some of the things that they were about to get involved in. And I thought that was a blessing. I don't have the answers because I've never been a man, and I tried to teach them off my upbringing as a woman, raising as I was a single mom. Home.
Okay. I got
and
a gentleman
on. Pretty doggone good, I must admit.
Well, that's
and
good.
So
that's
I,
good.
Yes, they turned out pretty darn good. And,
let me say,
I would hope for that for a lot of the young men that's coming up today. They're doing certain things because everybody have different situations.
Sure.
And if we had the older guys, middle-aged guys, reaching out to these guys, maybe someone could say one word that would make them think something different. That's why I speak a lot to them.
I'm glad you said that because Pastor Wallace he's a little busy tonight. He's going to stay with us as long as he can. He probably have to leave and come back. But he's with us right now. Pastor,
Pastor Wallace.
How are
you? Go ahead, Pastor. Will you respond to her a little bit for me?
Yeah, I think she just made it very clear, you know, what she's not and what she's capable of doing. She's doing the best she can with what you have. And
right.
as a woman,
right.
you know, speaking to young brothers who have the respect and don't want to let her down, you know, so the
right.
brother told her, see, I was doing some things, you know, as you all had a discussion, I was doing some things that I just didn't want to tell you about. And that
mm-hmm.
is because you didn't want to hurt your feelings or put you down or to make you think you didn't do a good job at whatever you was doing. So I really appreciate you saying that. And, you know,
tonight.
You're talking about, huh?
My son said that to me. What you're saying right now, he said that to me tonight.
Yeah, that's it. That's what I got. I got that from you. And,
mm-hmm.
and that's the thing that I'm appreciative of, you sharing that. And it goes back to some of those very things that I knew my mother, I would do the same thing because I had the utmost
mm-hmm.
respect for her, you
mm-hmm.
know, and just the thought of the power of words and
yes.
the power of an innocent set of eyes, you
mm-hmm.
know, can hear and see things. And suddenly, even though the upbringing was great,
yes.
but the power of that one may be able to see and hear,
mm-hmm.
it can captivate a person's mind sometime, and they want to give it a try. And it's always that first try of anything that would cause most people now to want to try it again.
All
now,
right.
there are
yeah,
just some
right.
things that men tried, and they just didn't want to try it ever again. Thank God
mm-hmm.
for those people. But
right.
the
all
majority
right.
of people in my come up, when we tried to do a particular thing and liked it, we went right back at it again.
So we were creatures of habit. So you said we're creatures of habit.
Yeah, we went right back at it now. And I'm saying
okay.
that to say a common man, you know,
uh-huh.
we need a common solution. We need a common solution in our community. And you said earlier about a person could say something according to just one word that would cause
one word.
The young brothers to make a turn, and that's
yes,
certainly true. Certainly
so,
true.
So
it was
Pastor,
only yes.
I'm sorry to cut you off, but you hitting you all in my plate right now, man.
This
is great right here, and I got a little lemon in there too. 8112. Look, you're right at it. And what is missing, in my humble opinion, is the pillars. Now, we have people who say they're leaders, yes, but we don't have any real pillars of our communities. People who can be a role model. I'm talking about 8112 men who can say to young guys, I understand where you're going from. I see why you come up with that construct, like the ghetto boys. But understand that everywhere is not a ghetto, and it don't have to be a ghetto. Here is how
you. I'm not in a ghetto right now, but that's okay. I'm still ghetto fabulous sometimes.
Help a Holy Ghost. Help a Holy Ghost.
Where the whole world.
Do you understand what I'm saying, Pastor? That's what you. That's what you're saying. And I'm thinking about your book now, Pastor, where you looked at those young, when you were a young boy, you looked up to certain guys for, you looked up to them as examples. And in your mind, you couldn't see life being any happier than doing what you saw them do. Will you speak to that just for a second, right quickly? And then and we'll tie that into what a real pillar looks like.
Mm-hmm.
Sure. Sure, that's great, Doctor. I remember a guy standing on the corner, and I was sitting on the porch as a little kid, very innocent. And I used to see them standing there, and they were styling, and they were profiling. And the power of the attraction, it captivated my mind. And so I became curious, and I wanted to find out why are they standing on the corner like that, looking like they're having so much fun.
Mm-hmm.
And eventually became that. And discovered it was a trap. But it didn't look like a trap. It didn't even sound like a trap. It sounded like what they were saying was worth trying to find out how to go about doing it, you know.
Yes.
And sure enough, it wasn't because they wanted me to do it or to be into it or anything. It was just something that they displayed without knowing that somebody was watching them that was actually taking notes, you know.
Right. And, what did you say, Pastor? You were doing what, Pastor?
Yeah.
You were doing what, Pastor?
Taking notes.
You were taking mental notes. Now, do you know that you were a learner and they were teaching? So that was some instruction taking place. It was not formal instruction, but it was instruction.
No, but they were. They were definitely instructions, man. And from afar, I was taking notes at such a speedy pace because being a little kid like I was, you know, I shouldn't have been able to go to elementary school talking the language that I was talking. But I was hearing them from afar, and I knew how to speak a language. What they were saying in church, they were calling it an unknown tongue. In church, they would say you're talking in tongues. But see, I used to talk in tongues, street language. And, you know, and I'm saying that in a humble way that those guys didn't mean me no harm. They wasn't trying to bring no harm to me. Matter of fact, they was my inspiration. They are the ones that I'm doing what I'm doing now for, you know, because I know they would want me to set a better example than they set for me, you know. And I thought it was such a beautiful thing. Matter of fact, two of those guys are in my book that was older than I, that I spoke about in there, and then one named Charlie and the other named Snooky, you know. They really forewarned me, you know. Didn't want me to do the drug or anything. They didn't want me to do that heroin.
Okay.
They even forewarned me. And things like that. So that's a beautiful thing, man.
Pastor, 8112 was sticking a poke in me the other night when we were talking about education. I got it all to myself now. She can't go nowhere. I got it all to myself now. 8112, I'm not beating you up. You know I love you like peanut butter loves you, right?
Yes, sir.
Let's talk about education and what should it look like for
it should look like what it's looking
young
like.
People that are struggling. Go ahead.
I'm a reading person. I said that before. And they blame it on I just get tired of hearing about education where they play like the younger children from our generation, or not our generation, I'm sorry, I apologize, from our culture.
Sure, sure.
It's so dumb. Some of the best men I've heard you speak about. And some of them they could read, and some of them they could write, some of them they couldn't, but they had other knowledges.
Right.
And they were powerful enough. They were so powerful they could start fire with their words.
Right.
That's what I think about education today. They're so busy all this and that. People walking around suit and ties. But where you at in the hood? You're scared to go to the hood to put your word on a piece of paper for these kids. Talking about the popo running around reading, hell, you ought to be stopping crimes in the school. Maybe they will get shot up.
Okay.
You are a teacher, but you're not a school teacher. You are a police.
8112. You got all kind of weapons on you, don't you? Because you got me above. You done raised me above you now. But let me show this experience. In the 90s, I was a young man, and I worked in the prison. I worked in the prison for 2 years. I was a prison guard, correction officer. And while I was there, I had an engagement with a guy that was about my age.
Mm-hmm.
And this dude cussed me from head to toe. He told me about myself, told me I was working for the white man and that I was his slave, and I was there to make the other slaves stay in shape. I said, well, there's some white slaves here too, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But my point was, this brother, I had studied history at Fisk University, right?
Okay.
And this cat gave me a rundown of history, and he didn't miss a lick. You know what I said to myself, Pastor Fowler? I said, this dude would be dangerous on the street, man. I'm like, dude, you looking at 50 years behind bars. Brother, if you were out there teaching these young cats, man, you would be a formidable force, dude. I mean, and what it told me, 8112, is to your point, some of our greatest assets, if they're not physically locked up in prison, they're mentally locked up with drugs, with alcohol, with gambling, with sex, and even sometimes just in a mental prison.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if our education does not lead us toward providing them the information or knowledge how to overcome those barriers become healthy in their thinking, you understand what I'm saying? Then we're doing no good. Now the question is, you made a good point. People are scared to go to the hood and to talk real to little shouties. Y'all excuse my vernacular tonight, okay?
They're scared to go break. I'd rather you be for real than fake.
Hey, can I keep it 100 then? Can I keep it 100?
100.
All right, now, so the deal is, I asked myself, Pastor Waller, why are so many preachers in particular so afraid to go engage these young guys? And I come up with this conclusion. With all due respect to them, they don't know enough to tell them.
My goodness. But listen,
they don't know exactly
how
to relate to them.
Hold it right there, Pastor, if you don't mind. Now, you know, I don't interrupt not much
at
all.
No, go ahead, brother.
I don't want to forget that what you just said there. So
all right.
I would raise a question because you said they don't have enough information to get out there. Why would they not just admit that?
My Lord.
You see, it would be a plus if they just admit that they do not have the information to carry out that, meaning that they're not doing what needs to be done concerning what the Bible says. Okay, admit that. And then make a stand and say, well, let me support somebody that is going out there. Why would he not just
say something?
Yes.
Please.
Go ahead, 8112.
I think some of it, maybe I'm wrong, maybe I'm right.
Maybe you're not wrong.
So many people, there's going to come a day, which is today, you're going to be judged by your interview.
That's right.
People speak in the name of the Lord, my Father, that they're doing wrong because they're looking for a dollar bill instead of trying to touch the heart and the soul of a whole lot of people that need, including myself. But they can't get me because I've already been taught. But I can learn something every day. And I'm willing.
All right. Hold on, guys. I don't mean to be rude. We have 4639. Yes. Welcome. I think that's my good friend, Professor Robinson. How you doing, sir?
I am doing great, Doc. How are you?
All right. Question or comment?
I do have a question that goes back to your point about the systems and the commitment. And there's a question that I love to ask people. It says, if you are looking for a really great basketball player, do you go to the black community or do you go to the Jewish community? And then the question is, why?
Okay.
The question
now,
is, why would
perfect,
you pick
hey,
either one?
Hey, I got
one?
The perfect question to answer that.
My goodness. Okay. My.
I'd like to hear
Pastor
that.
Pastor Wilder, go and get it, man. Go and get it. You know that's for you, don't you?
And I want to
hey,
hear
man,
it.
Let me do it.
You
hey,
know
man,
that's for
look,
you, don't
I've had
Pastor
enough.
Wilder.
Yes, sir. And I thank you, Professor, for asking that question. But, man, I've had enough load that I'm carrying around because I didn't get a chance to exercise the gift that I still have back then. And let me tell you the reason why. That I'm smack dab in the midst of a self-destructive lifestyle. And there was a college coach that knew how well I played basketball.
Okay.
And when I was little, I was a little husky little fella, so he named me, I'm left-handed, so he called me Little Lefty, meaning that he know what hand I shoot with. So his son and I, we actually played against each other. He went to another school, very popular school, Father Ryan, and I went to Cone High School. But make a long story short, when we graduated, I'm still stuck out there in the streets. I don't know what to do.
Mm-hmm.
And instead of coming to rescue me, they went many, many, many miles and selected someone else to go to Tennessee State. You know,
where did they go?
Where should the person
where did they go, Pat?
Where should the person go? Oh, man, they went on up there and grabbed some people, man, brought them back down to Tennessee State. I'm like, well, y'all didn't know I was here? Your son and I went to school together. You know? So I'm saying that to say I like that. I think they went to them other folks, man, and, you know, and it's just amazing. He said, where would a person go to get what you need in the basketball arena? Would you go to the black neighborhood?
Wow.
And they did not do it, man.
Hmm.
When he did
that's
other, so
reality.
It made sense what he said, though. I think that's a beautiful thing, man.
Go ahead, Professor. Follow up with that,
yes.
Professor.
Well, the question is really why? Why would you go to the black neighborhood? I think the vast majority of people, the answer is the black neighborhood. And the question is why?
Because you can play.
Why not?
Go ahead. No. Why not is too easy of a way out. Why? It's a question that requires you to think about why do people go to the black neighborhood to seek out that talent.
Okay.
That's right.
Well, I'll tell you what, Professor. If you want somebody who has agility, the ability to run fast and to make cuts like in football, you can go to the black community for that.
Mm-hmm.
If you want somebody
why? Why?
Okay, I'm going to get to that. Well, here's the point, 8112. Here's the point. Because there's a great abundance of untapped skill and talent that is unconscious of their greatest wealth and contribution to the world. So other people.
All right, now, that's what I want to hear.
Hold on. One second. Let me finish this thought. Other people see your value better than you do oftentimes. When I say that, I'm talking about many of us that come from the urban experience. And so they know how to capitalize off of your best assets better than you do. Go ahead, Professor.
Okay. I'm going to answer the question why. And
okay,
if you think about it, the black community over decades have demonstrated the ability to produce excellence in this area.
Yeah.
Okay. And we have a system, we have the processes in place that deliver this excellence on a consistent basis for decades.
Okay. Okay.
If you look at
right.
the number of people in the Hall of Fame, if you look at the first round picks, if you look at every year they're black people. There is no basketball gene. There is nothing that says because you are black, you are a better basketball player. That basketball gene does not exist. But every year we continue to deliver excellence.
Okay, okay.
And so we, here's an example, and I'm going to pull football into this. You will find more deadbeat dads at a football or a basketball game than you will at report card pickup.
What?
You will find more deadbeat dads at a football or a basketball game than you will at report card pickup.
All right, let me go ahead, 8112. What you trying to say?
Contain myself, but with all due respect to the professor, maybe you right and maybe you wrong, because one thing about it is this. We're talking about what you guys are trying to do. We're not talking about all the dads, because the dads that's sitting behind their desk, a lot of them don't, I don't care if they black, white, Puerto Rican, Mexican, blue, green, or yellow, as well as some of the moms. They shove their kids off to other kids. Maybe their lifestyle consists, rich and poor, some of the, as you call them, black children. Their parents can't be there because they're too busy working a job for 12 hours, maybe two or three jobs, try to take care of their kids and teach them the right way to go, some of them. Then to be able to go attend all these things, maybe they had an auntie or uncle that was willing to step in their place. That doesn't mean they do not care.
Right.
So, as you were speaking for basketball players, you sound like you're talking to me about the black ones, as you call it, that's doing all this extracurricular. What the extracurricular outside of playing football or basketball is doing for them is uplifting the other bigger folks to make their money.
Let me ask you this, 8112.
It's about money, isn't it? That's what
right.
they do.
8112.
Yes.
Do you think? Do you think that overall the greatest, the most successful athlete, African American, black athlete, do you think that their quality of life can be improved in any other way other than economic or having a lot of money?
Yes, I do.
Okay. So what do you think the gap is between what they did well and made the money they made off of? What do you think the gap? Now, let me be clear. I'm not suggesting that there's anything wrong with becoming a professional athlete.
Yes, sir.
There are examples of people who've done quite well and make major contributions to the world, literally.
Yes.
I'm not suggesting that. However, you know that if you got a football team, it's 15 players on the field at a time, right?
Yes.
And for every 15 on the field, there are probably 1,500 that know how to play just as good. But all of them can't play at one time.
Not at one time.
And they're only going to have about three streams. Yeah, they're only going to have three streams. On the basketball court, only five can play at a time by regulation. Is that right? And they're going to have maybe two backups on that team. But for every five you got 500 that just as good. That will never make it to the pro. So should we focus, and I think this is where the professor's going, should we focus our attention more on letting young men in the urban experience understand that athletics, entertainment, and rap and things of that nature are not the only things that, even though you're good at, it's not the only thing you can be good at. We know that they've been varied. And I would submit to you part of the problem is you got people, Pastor Waller, who stand up and get in the way running their mouth. They just a lot of loose rhetoric and loud noise that ain't doing nothing. So the people who know how to reach them and know what to do don't get the attention these cats get because they real loud.
That's right.
Perhaps
that's
part of the problem.
I think they're loud because they want to stay in the limelight. After some of them get a big head, kind of big, I love you, they want to be able to stay there. So the more attention they get, the more publicity they get.
Absolutely.
And when they get all this publicity, the more money everybody is trying to make.
Sure.
And it all goes back to when anybody get through, it starts with money and finish with money.
Well,
and that's what
here's
I
the thing. Here's the thing.
Yes.
What I'm suggesting we do to restore urban America is that we change the mindset, 8112. We change the mindset. Because I can give you $1 million today, and I would gamble with you. If I was a gambling man, I'd bet you the average cat in the hood, you gave him $1 million today, he wouldn't be able to tell you what he did with it a week later.
I don't know
it's
about
the mindset.
May I say something? Pastor?
Yeah, sure.
I don't know about that because, okay, I'm putting it like this. I had a lot of money in my hand that I was never used to. And I prayed to my father about what to do with this money. A lot of other things came about it, not with me on drugs or anything, but from people.
Okay.
My point to you is this. I have to disagree with you because when I prayed and went to my divine father, he showed me, he led me what to do. You need a house, get a house. You need a car, get a car. You need food, buy food. You need furniture to put in the house. And you need to keep on not forgetting and don't forget how you got it and what you did with it. And
well, let me ask you this.
Dr. Dockley, can I step in a second, please?
Yes, go ahead.
I'm going to go to piggyback on your question about you give $1 million, whatever it is. If you look at the research that Ariel Capital is a black investment firm in Chicago. Every year they look at black investment habits, and if you take an individual, same education, same job title, same salary, that white individual is going to invest and generate greater wealth than the black person. And this is, as I said, Ariel Capital, they do this research every year. They do it in partnership with Charles Schwab. And we also have other research that shows that the dollar in the black community does not circulate, and we are not spending money amongst ourselves as frequently and as often as other communities.
Okay.
And
now,
so
explain
to
why,
your point, if I give you $1 million, how are you going to leverage that money to drive wealth?
Hold on one second, 8112. 8112, hold on one second. Don't lose your thought. Professor, explain to us why that was so. What were the variables and what were the factors that led to the difference in how it was used? So we don't get lost. So we'll have some understanding.
The difference comes down to cultural focus and are we consumers or are we producers? In the black community, we tend to consume more than we produce. And as a result, we are spending money and we are spending with others. We choose not to spend with ourselves when you look at the results. And when we change that, we will get different outcomes. When we buy black, I have friends when I was in Chicago, and they wrote a book. They went out and they did it was a husband and wife team, and they were seeking out black businesses. And they had a very difficult time finding black businesses to give their money to.
Wow.
And so, yes, I was a member. I led the 100 black men in Chicago, and one of the members, he and his wife, and it was written up on Oprah and several other talk shows, they set out to buy black and support black-owned businesses.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to do. Sorry, go ahead.
Yeah, let me. I want to go back to, before we go to our commercial break, to 8112. 8112, I was going to ask you, of the money that you had when you spent
mm-hmm.
all of it, what did you have left, and what did you do with it that you can see where it worked for you or it produced itself, it grew from it? That's what I was going to ask you.
Okay.
Go ahead.
The money
you were going to say
I
something.
I'm sitting in it right now. And the money that I wasted, I did it on purpose. And I was so glad to get rid of it because it was, and I still have it monthly, but it was a problem. It was like people come at you. Some of them don't know you. Some of them do know you. They come at you hard, and I ain't never experienced nothing like that. It was, I'm going to stores trying to buy furniture, and they looking at me like as if, you don't have anything to pay for this You got to wait, blah, blah. Okay, and I'm thinking, man, I'm ready to walk out of this store. I don't even care. I tried to buy a car. The people got on my nerves so bad, I told them, to hell with y'all, I'm getting ready to go. They calmed down then. One of them actually got fired. That's my point. If you do what you can, you have to, I always say you got to talk to God about certain things, everything to me.
Okay,
and that's
all right.
What I did. And so now I still struggle some days, even though I have my monthly income from that outcome. But it's to keep me grounded, and I'm respectful, and I appreciate him for that. And so with these business owners, I'm one of them people. If I find out you got a restaurant, whether I like your food or not, and I won't know until I go find out, will I?
That's true.
And I'm
that's
going
true.
To find out. That's to support you.
Did you understand the logic of what Professor Robinson was saying in terms of...
Yes, sir, I did, and I appreciate and I respect what he said to the highest because I believe personally that he is very, very correct.
Okay. So the catch is...
Let me get this straight. That was speaking to me just then. That was Pastor Wallace, was it not?
That was just, most recently... Professor Robinson, but Pastor Waller was speaking too. Let me come back with you after this brief little break. Let me squeeze this break in there, and then we'll come right back and pick it up there. And there's a question I want to ask, put out there for our last 30 minutes here.
Okay.
Host, Reverend Reuben Dockery. Thank you for tuning in to Talk Straight on Blog Talk Radio. Here, you can share your thoughts as well as become informed about very important social issues confronting society today. Please take the time to visit my website at bfcinstitute.com. That's bfcinstitute.com to learn more about our efforts to educate, inspire, and empower disadvantaged families across America to improve the quality of life. The best way to stay in the loop of future broadcasts, times, and locations for our traveling educational lecture series and innovative ideas is to become a BFC Institute seminar participant. You may do so by clicking the Join Our Group tab on the homepage. I would be delighted to respond to your suggestions and engage you further in most transformative information. Again, thank you for joining us, and I look forward to hearing from you online.
Stand up for it.
in to Talk Straight. This is your host, Reverend Dr. Reuben Dockery. We're on tonight with another topic entitled Pillars of a Viable Community, How to Restore Urban America. That is our theme for the rest of March 2018. We'll have other conversations that are spin off from here. But we're grateful for those of you that have tuned in with us. You still have time. We've got about 24 minutes, 657-383-0944. If you want to share your comment, ask a question, we'll be happy to entertain it. Professor Robinson has come back with us again tonight, and Pastor Ricky Waller, I know he's in and out, but he'll jump in here when he can. And my good friend from Peoria, Illinois, 8112, has been with us as well. You can join us, 657-383-0944. Let me just recognize a few people here on Facebook. Ms. McDowell, thank you for joining us. Mr. Thomas, Brother Jamal Thomas, thank you for joining us. Ben Shelton, thank you so much for joining us. Bishop Marcus Campbell, thank you for tuning in with us here. And there are a few others who have looked at our page on Facebook. We want to thank you all. Now, let me get back to our conversation. I think Professor Robinson laid a pretty good framework here for us to get some things out of this. But let me pose this question to you guys and have you respond. And if Pastor Wallace has joined us back here again, maybe he can weigh in as well. So here's the question.
I'm here.
Who's responsible for uniting, educating, and caring for a community? The government or the people of that community? That's the question. Pastor Wall, you wanna hit that right quickly? Were you able to get back with us,
yeah,
sir? Okay.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I have two things that I'd like to share concerning it. I was just meditating on the thought, and this is a humble thing. Now you got to remember that. And I wasn't a bad kid. I didn't think. Just got caught up into some things that would cause one to think one is bad. Innocent. And so that question that was raised earlier, and I was sharing about, you know, me playing ball pretty good, you know, and the guy knew it, and he went further. And these were black that he still went to. Now, how am I going to be restored if you look over me? You know I'm pretty good. You know you named me that as a little boy, but you went further. So now, my mindset is I'm already lost. I can't think about how to do anything. I don't even know who I am. But you had the knowledge of who I am. You went over my head. Not that you were supposed to or not, but you just went over my head. No, he's into all of this, and I'm not going to take time out for him. That means I can't be restored by you. Now, I went on to grew on up a little further and went to high school. And when I went to the high school now, I'm going to piggyback on that. This was a white school. They knew I was caught up and twisted, I'm sure. And they found out that I was pretty good. I used to get put out of school and things like that. And so I quit school. Mm-hmm. Don't you know? Somehow it got back to whoever it was. They made them get me back in school and had me to go out for the basketball team. And I made it and didn't get put out of school anymore, graduated and everything. But guess what? When they was finished with me, they was finished with me. They didn't want nothing else to do with me. But I'm using that for an example, though. But at least they seen, you know, through whatever somebody must have said to them, that boy can play basketball. You better get him back in school. In other words, that's just to help that white school.
Yes,
I'm
right.
Just saying that that's what happened. So that's what went on. And Tennessee State was not a white school. But I was a lost kid. And so I'm saying all that to say, how are we going to restore if we overlook the people that need to be restored? How can we not tell? Where are the pillars at? That's basically what you're saying, Pastor. And who's going to
respond to that question for me, though?
Okay.
You know, the question relative to who's responsible for ensuring that a community is united, educated, and cared for. Is it the government or the people?
The people.
It's not the government. It's definitely not the government, you see? And that's the thing that I'm truly saying, you know, to restore. It was no government. Those people weren't affiliated with the government. These people that knew this little left-handed kid that's growing up lost, he thought I was drinking wine. I wasn't drinking wine. I was doing heroin, you know. But I don't know, you know what I mean? I mean, this is what he seen me in the ballpark. I'm just being honest. He seen me in the ball field and said, you know, yeah, you've been drinking wine. I'm like, saying to myself, I don't drink no wine. I'm on heroin, and then he's going to be killing me. I don't even know who I am. But I'm saying all that to say, man, we have to do something. We have to be that pillar, and it's not the government's responsibility to be that pillar, man. No kind
yes,
of way.
Sir. Okay.
No kind
all right.
of
way. Well, you were trying to lodge a response, 8112. What were you going to say?
I was saying that he's right. I agree with. I made a mistake saying I agree with the professor. With all due respect, sir, I don't agree with you. I agree with Pastor Wallace. And yes, we're supposed to be the pillar because it starts with the people, and the people as persons are to be the groundwork. It's just like players putting one brick down and build you a whole house on that one brick. It may take you a long time to get, but the outcome of it will be you now have
That's
a
right.
home. You that would be the outcome
and
of it.
Go ahead. I'm not sure about the agreement, the disagreement, but to your question, the accountability, the responsibility should always lie with the individual, with the community members, and the people who we elect. They are our employees. We tell them what to do. And if they're not doing what we if they are not doing what we tell them to do, then we should hold them accountable. Black, white, brown, green, red, purple, I really don't care, male or female. And we get rid of them and bring somebody in that is going to do our bidding. And so my point behind the question around where do you go to find a great basketball player is to illustrate the fact that we create excellence on a regular basis. And our focus, when we change our focus and we leverage the same systems and processes that we have in place to create excellent basketball players, excellent football players, we can use that same system to create excellence in a lot of other areas.
But that's not
that's
working.
That's my point for that question.
It's okay. not working.
Excuse
sir.
Me?
That is not working.
It's not working because we choose not to do it. That's why it isn't working. We choose not to focus our attention.
It's working for you and those others out there speaking ill-mannered about these, as you call them, black kids. It ain't working for us down there in the hood. It's working for y'all because it's about money. It ain't working for you.
So, 8112.
Yes, sir.
Arguably, my son is a black boy, black male.
So is my daughter, and so is my other six kids.
All right, hold on one second. Now, I grew up in the housing project in a certain type of experience, but he didn't. What changed?
And he don't know.
Hold on.
He ain't trying to find out because he ain't down there where they are.
8112. Yes. Hold on.
Yes, sir.
Let me finish, darling. Let me finish. The difference between he and I is what I learned and how I have taught and redirected him from what I went through. Now, I say that to say it could work for any other young man his age and younger if they had someone to give it to them and they availed themselves to the information and the knowledge. The reality is, hold on one second. Hold my hand. You got my hand?
I got
you. Don't let me go now. Don't let me go.
Let you have a...
See, the thing about the hood is when I was there, we got used to basically not using our best talents and making excuses for them. And we bought into the notion that someone else can think and do better for you than you can do for yourself. That's a lie from the pits of hell. What happens is there's a lot of talent, there's a lot of skill, there's a lot of vitality that is untapped and unrealized by the individuals who possess it. But what they have not had is a pillar or messenger to pull that out of them. Really, that's what education means, to educe, bring out that which is in, out of you. So we start knowing that you got some in you. We just got to build on that foundation. So it's not that we're suggesting 8112, that black people, black males, are no good and there's no hope for them. That's not what either the professor or me are saying. But what we're saying is we know how and know what is necessary to make that difference. Does that make sense? I'm not asking if you agree with it. Does it make sense?
I think that Professor Wallace said it in a nutshell. I mean, not Professor. I keep calling him the Professor.
Pastor Wallace.
He said it in a nutshell because I feel like he touched personal points with me because he's been there. If you ain't been there, how do you know what to tell me that's going to be proper for me? You can't tell me. You can say
now,
what
you're
you
assuming.
Want.
But what you're assuming,
Professor Dockery. Professor Dockery.
Yes, I'm hold on one second. I'm coming to you, Professor. What you're assuming is that Professor Robinson don't know and haven't been there, and he's not a man that
you
does it. But I'm gonna let him.
Listen
to him. I'll let him speak for himself. He's still on the line with us. Go ahead, Professor Robinson.
Pastor Dockery.
Yes, sir.
Are you talking to 309?
I like to share with everybody on the line that my upbringing, the vast majority of people in this country lived a better and had a better upbringing than I did, based on where I came from. I am an immigrant, and there is that immigrant mentality, but there's also the fact that the country, I shared with people, I don't know if it was Tuesday or whenever, that I was swimming in a dirt hole, and that was my swimming pool.
Okay.
Okay. And so I've also led the 100 black men in several cities in this country where we work with black folks. I work with prisoners. I volunteer my time with kids. And so I live the school to prison pipeline from the work that I do with elementary schools, middle schools, Fisk University, and the prison program with the Tennessee Prison for Women in Nashville and the Charles Bass facility that closed down for men. And so I've been there, done that, know what it's like, and at the end of the day, it helps when we can leverage data to help identify where the issues are, but we have to be honest with ourselves, and we have to acknowledge the things that we can control and take control of those things to change our circumstances. We have to do that.
Professor, with all due
respect, we have to be honest.
Some of us do that because we live that life. As you were speaking upon, I commend you for doing the great things that you have accomplished. Come from where you came from, such as myself. But I also, at the same time, as we've worked so hard to get where we are at, sometimes we also forget about, quote, unquote, the little people. If you understand what I'm saying.
Well, I don't think anybody's doing that, 8112. I do know this, that oftentimes when I hear that myself, 8112, quite a bit, where people say to me, well, you know, you got your suit in town and you don't understand. Well, I don't stand on a soapbox and talk about, you understand all that I've been through in that regard. But when I get close to young cats, like in that 6x6 room, I'm able to speak their language to them. Because that's my language. We share that. But, you know, and you see a lot of grown males, 81, 12, 40 and 50 years old, dressed like they're 10, 11, or 15.
You are so right.
You understand what I'm saying? That's backwards.
Yes, I do.
That's backwards.
Yes, I've seen
and
it myself.
They are a
yes.
poor example for these young cats.
You are
should
right.
speak to them in the language that you expect them to excel to or aspire to. You should model to them the behaviors that you expect of them. If I can use my myself as an example, I never will forget that my son was probably about 8 or 9 years old. Take him into school. He asked me a question, and I said, "Yes, sir." Well, lady turned around. She said, "Why are you calling him sir? He's just a little boy." And I explained to her, that's what I expect him to be. At 8 or 28 or 58 is a respectable gentleman. And he has to learn that you get respect by giving respect.
Yes,
so
you do.
So it's not and, that. Go ahead, Professor. Go ahead, Professor.
And, Professor, I just have one thing to say. It's at the end of the day, we are looking for and we need people with plans, with a plan. And so let's talk to the leaders in our communities and let's ask them, what is your plan?
That's a reasonable plan.
And let's evaluate those plans. And then for the plans that work, let's execute those plans. They should have a plan. That is the simplest. We need a strategic plan. Ask them if they have one. If they don't, demand that they do. And then let's evaluate. Go sit down. Let's evaluate the plans. And let's pick the plan that's going to help us to get from A to Z. Whatever we determine Z to be, but let's have a plan.
Okay, you said
and that should be a fair, you know, request of any leader is to share their plan with us.
Sure.
What if we can get online and tap to everybody that we can to get them to listen to this radio station of Pastor Dockery and touch in on a plan? Wouldn't that be a good idea?
You know what would even be better?
Everybody listening.
You know
yes,
what would be
sir.
Better? I'm looking
what?
For people. I'm looking for people to listen and hear what we're talking about, and to take a leadership role to bring us to their area, so that we can not just talk about, but I can demonstrate to them how this plan can be used to transform their communities, and most importantly,
like good,
huh?
It sounds like a good idea because that's what the professor just said. That do sound like a good plan. What you just said. And that's
what
I was trying to say. If I didn't say it correctly, all my words, you know, I am who I am. So.
You're still holding my hand, and you know we love you. Don't you start it.
I got you.
Okay.
But I'm saying
but listen,
that sounds like a good plan. How do we bring this to Peoria, Illinois, is my question.
All right. So you've heard the website and things of that nature, but I have your information. I will give you more specialized. What we actually do is we try to organize groups of no less than 50 in the area, and we partner with a local church or community organization so that we'll have the facility to bring it, and then we'll bring our research-based material with us, and there is a cost for it. So we try to raise funds locally in each of the areas that we are, and the more contributions that we get, the easier it is for us to just give it to them.
Be a word way to get me back in the church house because I want the young kids, the young men, to be safe and stop the killing and the fighting and try to be productive.
Absolutely. I'm going to call you and we're going to have a substantive conversation about that.
Thank you so much.
Yes, ma'am. Yes, ma'am. Pastor Wallace, are you back with us? He's been in and out. He's working. He's trying to do two things with a couple of heads. We got about 5 minutes before we cut out of here. You there, Pastor?
I'm back again.
Okay, good deal.
I understand you, Biz.
I'm grateful that you're here with us. We're about to wrap it up, Pastor. And I know you had to pull away for a minute. Can you give us a final thought here and kind of lead us to our next episode next Tuesday?
Yes, what I like to do, I like to encourage everyone who's listening, who has something to say, you know, because the main thing I've always said, and I hear, you know, we are talking about having to basically sound like from time to time we'll be debating. But when we all come together and think about the power of one accord, mm-hmm. and then start to exercise some of the things that we're bringing forth action, and I know this mm-hmm. is what the professor is talking about, you know what I mean? It's
right.
with the whole concept of what you do, Pastor Doctor. And I thank the sister for coming in, and she shared some very great things. But here's the ongoing process of the power of togetherness. It says, where there's two or three gathered together, he says, in my name, he said he'll be in the midst of it. See, if he's not in the midst, I don't want to be affiliated with nothing in the world, because I've done all that I could do without him being affiliated with my lifestyle, you know, and I didn't ever call on him or anything. So I just enjoy, you know, the conversation that you bring it forth, no matter what has been said tonight. We got to keep on pushing, and that plan will work when he, the Waymaker's involved in it. It's much better that way. So I just want to just stay encouraged to everybody who, again, participated tonight by way of listening or just having something to talk about. You're welcome. Praise God. He's
so
worthy of it.
He is worthy. He is worthy. So the next three weeks, we're going to be dealing with, in the first week, we're going to, Tuesday and Thursday night, it's going to focus on some key things that we need to do at home to educate children. And the next week, that Tuesday and Thursdays will focus on some means by which we can promote economic development within our neighborhoods and so forth and so on. And the following week will focus itself on a healthy theology for revitalizing our neighborhoods, our families, our homes, and things of that nature. So, and we're placating off of tonight's topic, Pillars of a Viable Community. So really what we're doing is extenuating on those three pillars: education, economics, and your theology. I would submit to you that we have a rather ineffective theological position on a lot of things we do, because what we do is we justify inaction through God. And I can tell you, as a pastor for 22 years, that's unhealthy. That's unhealthy. And we're going to offer some things that might help us redirect that. But Professor, thanks for joining us again. And 8112, thank you for joining us. And we're going to have to, time is against us again. And we're going to have to cut out. We got about a minute and 40 seconds here. So what I'm going to do is to go ahead and thank you all again for joining. This has been Talk Straight. www.bfcinstitute.com is the website. Learn more about us and support us. And we'll be back next Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. for another episode of Talk Straight. We want to thank each and every one of you for your participation. And those of you just listening on Facebook, we appreciate you. And we will see you next week for another episode.
Someone